Welcome to our third sermon in our sermon series entitled, When Life is Unfair. Today's sermon title, Silent Meditation. Open your Bible to Psalm 4, verse 4, and let's begin.
So Psalm 3 and 4 was written by King David, and he wrote these when he was fleeing from his son Absalom, who was attempting a military coup. He's hiding somewhere, and he's confronting the unfairness of all this. So in verse 4, he says, here's what I learned. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent, Selah. About 600 years after King David wrote that, the Greeks who loved plays, absolutely loved plays, the theater in Ephesus will hold just about as many people as Jacob's Field. They loved plays. And they particularly loved plays about life being unfair. They called them tragedies. And about 600 years after David and Solomon, the Greeks took that story and put a strange twist on it. They told the story of Oedipus the king. Oedipus was born the son of Laius and... her name will come to me. I'm sorry. And when he was born, the oracle of Apollo came to King Laius and said, your son is going to grow up and kill you and marry his mother, your wife, and be king of this city. So Laius said, oh, no, he's not. And he took that little baby, gave it to a servant, and he said, I want you to carry this baby to the north, and I want you to abandon the baby where it won't be found. The servant takes the child, abandons him, but he gets found and taken from the city of Thebes to the city of Corinth. On his way... On his growing up in the city of Corinth, he gets adopted by the king and queen of Corinth. And when he is a young man, the same oracle who spoke to his dad came and spoke to him and said, you're going to kill your father and marry your mother. And he said, oh, no, I'm not. I would never do such a thing. And so without telling anyone, because he really thought the king and queen of Corinth were his real parents, he didn't know that they had adopted him, he abandons the city. And as he's walking down the road, he meets on the road a very rich man being carried in a litter with some soldiers around him. And the rich man said to his guard, knock that guy off the road. Well, Oedipus grew up as the son of a king. He wasn't one to be knocked off the road. So the guard who tried to knock him off the road, he killed. And then tried to walk past the litter. But as he was walking past the litter, the rich guy in the litter took a rod and hit him in the head. Well, he lost his temper and killed the rich guy in the litter and all his guards and walked away not having an idea who it was. So he walks up to the city of Thebes. You can guess who it was, can't you? It was his dad. He killed his dad not knowing it. Goes to the city of Thebes, solves a riddle, the Sphinx goes away, the city's free, they love him, they don't know where Laius went, but they kind of like this guy, and they make him the king of the city, and unknowingly, he marries Yocasta, his mother. And things are going well for a couple of years, but then a terrible plague falls on the city. And Oedipus says to the oracle, why is this happening? The oracle said, because King Laius has been killed unjustly and the plague won't go away until that's fixed. So Oedipus, not knowing that he killed the king, said, then I'll figure it out. And he starts figuring it out. Well, he figures out that he's the one who killed Laius, and that that was his father, and this woman that he's been living with and had children with, she's his mother, and the prophecy had come true. When Yocasta heard it, she committed suicide, and Oedipus took the brooch off her robe, gouged out his eyes, and walked defiantly out of the city. When the Greeks heard this play, they cheered in a standing ovation that was almost a riot. Because the Greeks hear that play very, very differently than you and I hear that play. In the Greek culture, Oedipus was a hero because he defied the unfairness of his fate. He defied it. He couldn't control it, but he defied it, and it made him a hero in their eyes. But we're Americans, and we tend toward the victim hearing of the play. We don't like the play because what? Poor Oedipus is a victim. They're all victims. There's no winner. Life stinks. What are we supposed to do in such a stupid world? That's the American mentality. So I've taken the time to tell you this story. Cultures create inclinations toward unfairness. And what the Greeks wanted to create was a heroic spirit in the face of unfairness. What our culture wants to create is a victim mentality. You're a victim. There's nothing you can do. Give in. And I believe there's only one way to face unfairness in life that's way out of our control. And we have to face it with a heroic spirit. We can't face it with a victim mentality. Now, please don't be angry with me. You can send me angry emails. I'll accept them. I know this goes against a lot of what you've heard. I know this goes against the hand-padding culture that we are. But I'm simply telling you, in the face of unfairness, if you redefine yourself as a victim, you surrender the rest of your life, the rest of your love, the rest of the good living that you can do. You just give it away. And it's a choice that we make. On the other hand, you can say, I am facing unfairness and I refuse to be a victim, and I'm going to heroically overcome this unfairness. Church, I can't stop the unfairness. I can't. The world is broken. I stood right here and did the funeral of a 9-year-old baby. It was the most unfair thing I can ever imagine. Unfair. I saw this little girl when she was healthy, running around, happy, little angel baby. And then gone. I know some of you've had moments where people you trusted in, they just betrayed you, and the unfairness was palpable. You've been cheated at work. Some of you had terrible parents. Some of you had terrible kids. We can't change that. But we can make decisions about how we're going to face it. And I believe in Psalm chapter 4, verse 4, we have a very short paradigm on how to confront unfairness heroically. This clock isn't ticking, and I'm going to need it. This is a long sermon. Number one, we aren't stoics. We are not stoics. We don't deny the pain and the sorrow and the grief of unfairness. We don't deny it. Look what it says. The translation you're using says, be angry. Some of your translations say tremble. The actual Hebrew word is the word ragaz, and it literally means be agitated to the point of actually quivering. Some of you can relate to that. That's what this word means. You are so agitated on the inside that you actually feel yourself tremble. Allow the pain, the confusion, the unfairness to touch you so deeply that you're perturbed to the point of actually trembling. We accept these emotions, but don't act on them. Now, the problem is when I have to confront these kind of emotions, I'm already hardwired to respond in two very unhelpful ways, fight or flight, right? When you are this deeply touched emotionally, there's an automatic trigger in you, and it's called the fight or flight trigger. That's why David said, allow this pain, sorrow, and misery to touch you so deeply that you actually tremble, but do not sin. We sin when we deny the experience. When we say to ourselves, I don't accept this. I simply refuse to accept it. I'm just going to act like it's not true. You sin against yourself, church. And you cut a big, deep swath in your soul that probably won't heal. We sin when we repress the experience. We say, yes, it happened, but I don't really care. Yes, this person lied to me, but I don't care. Yes, the work was unfair with me, but I don't care. That we sin against ourselves when we respond to unfairness with repression. We sin against ourselves when we respond by passing the experience on to somebody else and blaming them. Unfairness will trigger your blame mechanism until you blame God himself. I've heard it happen a million times. All right, we sin against ourselves when we surrender to the experience and we just check out. Some of you have given up on life. Your heart is beating. You're eating food. You're going through the motions, but you're not living. You gave up life a long time ago. Allow unfairness to touch you deeply, but don't sin against yourself by quitting on life. We sin against ourselves when we try to numb the experience with drugs and alcohol. We try to just medicate ourselves the rest of our lives with drugs and alcohol. We sin against ourselves. How about this? Americans are good at this. We feel the unfairness very deeply, and then we try to outrun it by keeping ourselves busy 24 hours a day the rest of our lives. Because we know if we ever stop long enough that this thing is going to come running up and catch us. We sin against ourselves when we become resentful. We sin against ourselves when we become vengeful. We sin against ourselves when we decide to live in an ever darkening world. So this is what David says. If you're going to face unfairness heroically, it has to begin with facing it. This hurts. It's unfair. It's confusing. It's absurd. I don't like it. Facing it until I actually tremble with it. But then refusing to give in to the darkness. Some of you know that feeling. You came here tonight with that. That washes over you, doesn't it? Unfairness has put you in a very unpleasant place. And you look at life the very same way Bobby talked about in this song. You still have scars that the sun doesn't heal. You've been down to the bottom of a whirlpool of lies, and now you're not looking for anything in anybody's eyes. Sometimes your burden is more than you think you can bear. And it's not dark yet, but you're getting there. I don't even hear the murmur of a prayer. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there. You came in here with that in your soul. Most of you didn't come in here with that in your soul because you made a choice. You came here with that in your soul because life did that to you. And now you have to make a choice. You see? You got to say, I'm willing to look this straight in the face. I'm willing to look straight at it. I'm willing to admit how much it hurts, how unfair it is, how baffled I am by it. I'm willing to look at this so directly that it actually makes me tremble. But what I'm not willing to do is let it get darker and darker and darker in my life until there's nothing left of me to offer but victimhood. There's nothing left in me to give but one more expression of what a victim I am. No one around can ever count on me for anything again because I have redefined myself with this darkness. Church, can you hear it? Some of you feel it, don't you? Now listen to what David says. He doesn't end us there. Listen to what he says. Talk to yourself about following healthy patterns. Let this all touch you, but don't sin. Don't give in. Now, ponder on in your own hearts on your beds. This, the word that's translated ponder, it's really talk to yourself. Talk to yourself in your own bed. Well, what can I talk to myself about? Let's start. I can begin pushing back on an unfair life by looking unto Jesus, the author and the perfecter of my faith. Because he confronted unfairness far beyond anything you'll ever imagine. So far as I know, the president didn't send soldiers to kill you the day you were born. So far as I've heard, nobody in this room had every baby in the hospital killed the day you were born. From the very beginning, Christ was bombarded with tragic unfairness. And I can begin to think about Christ. And when I look at Christ, I see day after day of unfairness, but I never see a victim. I always see this incredible guy who just keeps standing up and saying, my life is valuable. I have something to contribute. I will not be pushed down. I will not be pushed aside. I will not be a victim. Church, talk to yourself about being a victim or a hero. I mean, at some point you get to say, do I really want to be like this the rest of my life? Do I have to surrender the rest of my life because life was very unfair to me last year? 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 25 years ago. Do I really have to give up the rest of my life because of something I had no control over these years ago? Or can I say that was the ugliest moment in my life? And I'm still weary and sick when I think about it. But I still have something to offer. I still have a contribution to make, and I choose to live the best life I can possibly live. Church, talk to yourself about the people around you who still need your love and your input. Okay, somebody was unfair to you and didn't keep their promises to you. They lied to you and broke your heart. But there are still people in your life who need your love. They need your affection. They need your attention. And you can't steal your love from people today because of something that happened in the past. And you have to think about that. You got to see the faces of the people you love and care about and say, I choose to be heroic for them. Church, talk to yourself about who are you becoming. If you stay on the same track that you're on right now, are you going to become the kind of person you want to be? Or are you going to be more of what you don't want to be? Church, if you stay on the track you're on right now, are things going to get darker and darker? Or are you on a track where life gets lighter and lighter? We walk in the light as he's in the light. If you're feeling the power of all this, I want you to write down the verses James 3, 17, and 18. And some of you need to write this on a little card and put it in your pocket and start carrying it around with you. This is what James says. The wisdom that is from above is first pure. When I'm talking to myself, I want to say, are you talking to a wise man? And the test is what I'm saying to myself pure, or has it become polluted? The wisdom from above then is peaceable. Are you talking to yourself in a peaceable way, or are you brutalizing yourself day after day? The wisdom from above is gentle. Are you gentle with yourself, or are you obnoxious to yourself? The wisdom that is from above is open to reason. Are you opening, is there any opening in your heart for somebody to talk to you about a better life? A better way, a better approach. Sincere. 18. And a harvest of rightness, a harvest of right living is sown in peace. I want to talk to myself. I want to make peace with the person that I live with in my heart and mind every day. church. Guess what? Only you can do that. Nobody can do that for you. You had no control over the unfairness, but you do have control over how you talk to yourself. And some of you have hurt yourself far worse with this internal self-talk than that unfairness ever hurt you, because you've perpetuated it day after day after day with your abusive self-talk. David says it's got to stop. Be touched by the ugliness of it all, but don't sin. And now start thinking about life. Make yourself think in a healthy way. Then we have this very odd phrase. Talk to yourself on your bed. That strikes us as odd, doesn't it? But this was written in a world before chairs were common. The world King David lived in, nobody sat in chairs. I got a chair at my house that some genius invented. It'll swivel all the way around, it'll rock back and forth, and it's got, you can lift your legs up. You know, a genius invented this thing. Children in the womb are no more comfortable than I am in that chair. I have fallen asleep in there on many occasions. But in a world where there are no chairs, there's something very comfortable about finally laying down. Have you ever been up all day, work, 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 come home, work, 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 and finally you lay down and you go, ah. Church? Well, that's what David's talking about. In his world, there were no comfortable chairs. Nobody had nice, soft love seats. There were no cushy recliners. But it was a beautiful thing at the end of the day to finally lay down and go, ah. I don't know what kind of mattress I have, but it's pretty comfy. He's not talking about you have to do this in bed. What he's saying is the goal of this self-talk is to get yourself at a place where you finally go, because unfairness that I don't have any control over has a way of tightening and tightening and tightening until there's nothing relaxed in my inner person. And my body sleeps at night, but my inner self stays as tense and wound up as ever. It's been years since some of you had a moment where your inner self just went, not talking about your body, I'm talking about you, the person who lives in there. You've been wound way too tight, way too long. You sleep at night, but you don't rest. You say to yourself, how come I'm always tired? Because you've wrapped that inner self so tightly, it can't rest. And David says, if you're going to face this heroically, you got to let go. You got to relax. Let go of the tension. Release the inner pressure. Think in a way that something inside of you can go, church, now you have a chance. Because your inner self is touched by the Holy Spirit, and you have a chance. If you can't let go and you stay tight and tense on the inside, you're going to lose every single time. Church? You weren't created to live that way. You were not created to live that way. Let this touch you. Let it wash over you. Tremble with agitation. But don't sin. Take some time. Pay attention to how you're thinking. Talk to yourself. Talk to yourself about what a hero Christ was in the face of unfairness and say, how can I be like him? Talk to yourself about who you are right now, and is that who you really want to be? Are you content to be this way the rest of your life? Is it getting darker or lighter in your life? Talk to yourself in a pleasant, peaceful, comfortable, reasonable way until your inner self says, whew. You hear this, church? This is Bible. This isn't Sigmund Freud. This is Bible. And then he says one more thing. Be silent. This is the Hebrew word damam, and it means both. It means primarily inner silence and inner stillness. Because what can happen is I can get to that place where I go, and then jump right back to where I was before. Have you done it? You've had that good moment, but you didn't hold on to it. You couldn't be silent and still, and you dove right back in. And you're no better than when you started. Seven scientific benefits of silence. This comes from Nahab Bakar. One, scientists learned that the primary way to relax is silence. External silence helps, but speaking to your health, speaking to yourself in a healthy way and being silent on the outside and still, they found out it's more relaxing than listening to music. Two, in silence, new brain cells are created. It turns out that when you're always, just like anything else, when you're always reacting, you're using stuff up. When you're silent and still, you're not burning all that energy and effort, and your brain actually produces new cells. Three, you get smarter in silence. Cognitive development happens when you're silent, and you start thinking in a healthy way. Four, you have profound insights. Now, I'm not saying every dumb thing you think when you're silent is a profound insight, but you're going to have some profound insights. Five, it relieves stress. Six, listen to this. I found this paragraph absolutely fascinating. Silence prepares you to act better when you have to act. Is this incredible? If you'll take some time to be silent and still, when you do have to act and talk and respond, you'll do it better than if you have no silence in your life. And then finally, better health. The agitation of unfairness reduces us, but relaxing back into a healthy life makes us heroic. And it turns out Jesus Christ practices this himself. Matthew 26, 63. Jesus is at the court of the Pharisees and the priest, and Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ. They have him on trial. They're brutalizing him with unfairness, and he won't answer them. He's silent. Why was Christ silent before the high priest? Listen. Unfairness can't argue with heroic silence. There's something so strong about inner silence and stillness, the unfairness of your life can't argue with it. You get that? When you're able to be silent and still, you are pushing back against unfairness in a way that it can't compete with. All right, I'm sorry. This is a long sermon. Matthew 27, 11. Now Jesus stood before the governor, that's Pilate, and the governor asked him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said, you have said so. But when he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things that they testify against you? But he gave them no answer, not even to a single charge. Look, so the governor was greatly amazed. Why was Christ silent before Pilate? Heroic silence is an amazing power in the roar of the unfairness of life. Listen, this could help you so much. Internal silence pushes back against the unfairness that's redefined you. And the silence pushes back against it. And you say, I don't want to be a victim. Silence helps you push back against that. External silence is a power greater than you trying to defend yourself one more time about this unfair thing that happened. People say, if only you would have done this, or only you wouldn't have done that, if you'd have thought to do this, or if you could have done this. Don't answer that nonsense. Your friend is not self-defense. Your friend is silence. You simply don't have to answer that nonsense. Church, Jesus himself practiced this skill. When life was overwhelmingly unfair, listen, he was agitated, but didn't sin. He was agitated, but didn't sin. He had healthy self-talk. He talked to himself in the right way. Christ knew how to relax. And he knew the power of internal silence and stillness and external silence and stillness. Now, I've given you a tool tonight. I've given you a tool that will allow you to be a hero in the face of every unfairness you faced in the past and in the face of every unfairness you're going to face in the future. You have a tool. And it's a powerful tool. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you that you speak to us so wisely in the scriptures. I thank you that you give us these good ideas. Now I pray for myself and everyone who's here tonight. I pray, Heavenly Father.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information about Christ Church, check us out on the web at christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, call us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.